The DP's Jim Wells says his brother, two cousins and the husband of a third cousin all have wood pellet boilers under the RHI scheme. Mr. Wells says he found out about all of these different family members on the same day, last Friday. He then issued a press release late on Friday night. He said, "I believe that was important that I make this information public as soon as I became aware of it." Mr. Wells has made this information public just days before the list of applicants to the RHI scheme are due to be published anyway. We did ask Jim Wells to come onto the programme this morning. He asked who was presenting when he found out it was me. He said no. The commentator is Seamus Close and Malachy O'Doherty here with us this morning. Seamus, morning to you. Malachy,
morning, Seamus.
So I watched the Twitter storm about this over the weekend. When Jim Wells, late on Friday night, people were talking about Donald Trump. He revealed four members of his family had these boilers. I reminded people over the weekend, there's nothing wrong with people having these boilers. If they applied, and there's no suggestion his family members didn't, if they applied legitimately to a government-approved scheme, Seamus.
Yeah, absolutely correct. But I think the reason for the storm and the reason for the suspicion and the cynicism of the electorate is that there's been a constant drip of bits and pieces of information about this scheme have been coming out now from when, the beginning first week of December. The people have become accustomed to it, but because of the what they interpret to be the whole attitude of politicians, and we got some of it there from your previous callers, referring to cover-up, referring to not coming out with all the information at the very start, then I feel that the electorate see that they've been treated to a certain degree as fools by the politicians, but most importantly, they've been treated with a large degree of disrespect. And with that disrespect will come the cynicism of the electorate. And it has been growing up, and the anger has been growing, and the frustration has been growing over this past number of weeks.
But you can be overly cynical. I repeat again, you know, his family are farmers. Farmers apply to government-approved scheme to help heat their sheds. Shock. There's no shock in that. I think some people, Malachy, were surprised that Mr. Wells found out about four different family members on the same day.
Yes, and I was too. One of them has one heater, and there are eight heaters, I believe, between the other three.
Yeah, his brother installed a boiler in September, October 2015. Yeah. That's just before the scheme closed down.
All of this may be perfectly legitimate. The kind of questions it raises are, A, are people now making more money out of their boilers than they're making out of their chickens? You know, if you're getting a good return on this subsidy, does having one of these boilers constitute almost a business in itself? Are there farmers who have specifically used the smaller boilers in greater numbers to get a proportionately greater subsidy?
Important for us to point out what we're not doing here is talking about Mr. Wells' family, because we don't know.
We're not talking about Mr. Wells. We're not making any accusation at all against Mr. Wells or his fine family and their wonderful contribution to the poultry industry in Northern Ireland. Absolutely. But there are questions in the air that arise from the mismanagement of the scheme. We have a report, for instance, in the newsletter that the majority, the greater number of the boilers that have been installed under the scheme do not actually replace previous heating arrangements. Now, I can understand why somebody has got a...
Well, Jim Wells said in his statement, actually, that all of these farmers, he said, have been involved in poultry rearing for well over a decade. The wood pellet burners replaced existing heating systems.
Well, according to the newsletter, the majority of the boilers don't. But there's been an expansion
in Jim Wells'
of the poultry
case, they
industry.
Did.
So I suppose if people are opening up new sheds and they're opening up new developments, then they need new boilers for them. But we're going to get clarification on a lot of things this week. We're going to have Martin O'Muller announce his public inquiry. And presumably when he announces that, we will know who's going to chair it, whether it'll be a judge who will chair it, who the other panel members are on it, and assessors and so on. And we're also going to get a list from Simon Hamilton of the people who are using this scheme. Now, both of these things are being squeezed in rapidly, you know, on the, you know, on the cusp of an election, because that's how, because they have to be out there. Simon has, I think, been well. I don't know what his practical reasons are for delaying this to the last sitting of the assembly. So, an effect of that will be that he will not be particularly fiercely scrutinised on it, certainly in the assembly itself. And Marcin obviously wants to get that inquiry. And I was on the programme, or was I? But I think I was on the programme when Declan Kearney was wriggling on a pin, trying to avoid a public inquiry, and Naomi Long was essentially slapping him over it, and very effectively. And now they're going for that. But they have to get that out before the start of an election, because they can't go to the electorate and be faced with the question, well, what are you doing about this? They have to be seen to be doing something.
Seamus Close, Jim Wells has urged other politicians to follow his example, saying, frankly, if you delay and then it comes out, people will then ask, why did you hold back?
Yes, and the question that everybody would say to that, or the answer that everyone would give to that, well, why didn't they do it at the beginning of December, exactly to pick up the point that Malky's making?
Well, Jim Wells, presumably, if you read from what Jim Wells is saying, that he only found out on Friday. So this RHI scandal has been massive before Christmas. One of the best, you know, massive amounts of people following this story. Before Christmas, the Arlene Foster interview, the Jonathan Bell interview, all that flowed from that. And so what Jim Wells actually did was he was watching all of that story unfold, and he didn't happen to ask his brother or the other family members who he knew were farmers, do you have a boiler? And he only finds out on Friday. And now he's telling politicians that they need to come out before people ask, why do you hold back?
Yes, don't do what I do, do what I say. You know, and again, I go back to the cynicism of the general public. I am not making any judgment whatsoever on Jim Wells, his family, or anyone else who may be on this list. What I'm saying is the general public out there have had so much of a drip, and then they see this frantic rush by politicians in the dying embers, the dying days of this assembly, to do everything that they should have done 6 or 7 weeks ago. And can you blame anyone? Can you blame anyone for saying, well, why didn't they do it back then? Were they trying to treat us all with a large degree of contempt, or they don't need to know? They're only the electorate. We're the politicians. We're the masters.
This publication of names, so let's bring this away from the Wells story. But this publication of names, Seamus and Malachy, which are on the list, remember there was a confidentiality clause in the contract that the public signed up to. When they were applying for this scheme. And essentially what the government is saying, yes, they're going to look at it a case-by-case business, but the public interest overrides that. Should it? Should it override it? Because actually, if you do a deal with the government and there is a contract in place assuring you of your anonymity, why should the government welch on that?
Well, what it tells you is that the DUP and Simon Hamilton and the executive generally are going to, you know, they will take a hit for this. If you have a confidentiality clause and you've told people that you're essentially breaking a promise to them by disclosing their name, then you're going to suffer for that. You're going to suffer in terms of the future trust that people will put in you. And you're going to suffer, I would think, you're going to suffer in terms of votes. If a lot of these people were previously DUP supporters, they're going to think they've been badly let down by the DUP.
There's an issue for society, though,
the
Seamus.
The issue for society is that a lot of these people on this scheme who did what was legal and did what was, and got a good deal for themselves, a lot of them are savvy country business people who knew fine rightly there was something sniffy about this.
But hold on a moment.
They knew fine rightly. I'm not naming anybody
Malachy,
and saying that anybody...
No, I know you're not. But Malachy, hold on a second. Actually, what a lot of them were people looking at a government-approved scheme, and the responsibility that the public has here. And I've watched the Twitterati do this in the past. You know, there's nearly a witch hunt against people, and you need to stand back and think, well, actually, why are these people being demonised? They didn't see a scheme that was developed up a back entry by some type of gangster. They saw a government-approved scheme that was approved right from the top of government, and they thought to themselves, during hard times of austerity, well, my goodness, I'm going to apply to that legitimate scheme. So
let me give you an example.
Does there need to be a little bit of restraint here
when these names are published?
There's also a big question here, and what you say, Stephen, is absolutely correct, and I would endorse it totally. But I think we should be focusing on the spike, on those that got in.
Exactly.
The spike. The ones who got in, get in quick, if I'm quoting the permanent secretary correctly. Those people were probably aware of a scheme, but they by then had probably or may have been told, get in quick, this is how it operates. You pay a pound for pellets. If you're burning a boiler of a certain size, this is the tariff that you'll get. £1, and you get £1.60 for the hour. That type of thing.
It's a government-approved scheme.
Sorry?
It was a government.
It was so like that, clearly demonstrating that this is, and I use my words, this is a rip-off. Then, yes, those people are accountable to me as a taxpayer, to Maliki as a taxpayer, and to you, and to all taxpayers.
There are government incentives.
Well, hang on a minute. 2 years ago, George Osborne introduced an ISA for pensioners, whereby they could realise a superb investment on up to £20,000, I think it was. I can't remember the precise return on that, but it was something around between 8 and 10%. I have just recently realised a private pension. I talk to guidance advisors and so on, and I say, what is it that I'm able to get from my pension pot? And what I'm able to get is in the under 10s of an economic return or an interest rate. Now, people know that that's the return on investment that you expect if you're looking at something which is legally secure, which is recommended by government, and you spend your money. Now, so somebody else comes along and says, I'm from the government. I'll tell you something that's far, far better than that investment scheme that you're talking about. I'll tell you something that's far better than any ISA you ever heard of. This is a 60% return on your investment, and it's from the government. Well, now people are going to say, God, that's marvellous. That's wonderful. I'll be in on that. And then they're going to say, I wonder how they can do that.
Yeah, and they're going to wonder about, you know, using heat to heat an empty shed.
Yeah.
For example.
Well, that's different. No, that's a completely different situation. I'm not talking about those people who've been hitting empty sheds or absolutely going against the spirit of the scheme. I'm talking about legitimate business owners who looked at an exceptional rate of return, but they saw that it was being endorsed by government. And all I'm saying is, before these names are released on Wednesday, there needs to be a discussion and people need to be thoughtful. Whether people are relatives of politicians or relatives of prominent businessmen or whatever, they applied to a government registered scheme and they were guaranteed anonymity. Naomi Long, leader of the Alliance Party, do you take my point, Naomi? It would be just too easy here for there to be a witch hunt against everybody and anybody who applied to that scheme.
Well, I take that point, yes, Stephen, but I don't think that means that the names either shouldn't be published or that people should have been given that expectation. If you get money from government or indeed from any public funder, you're normally expected to make that public. Usually, if you send letters, you have to put their crest at the bottom of your letter. You know, if people get money from the council crest goes on their letter. That's normally how it works. It's public money, so the public know that you're being funded and supported by public money. And that's typical not only where you have businesses and companies, but also, for example, single farm payment recipients who are individuals. Not businesses, but individuals are published. Barristers, for example, when they got money from the Department of Justice, their names were published. So there's absolutely no reason that I can see why anyone should have offered anonymity.
But they were offered it.
But Stephen, in the original application form, if you actually read the application form, it made it very clear that the location of those businesses and the details of those businesses would all be published.
But now, not their names.
But in a place like Northern Ireland, my goodness, Stephen, give somebody the postcode, tell them how many boilers there are and how many sheds they're heating, and it would take you 10 minutes to work out
it
how to work.
It doesn't matter, Naomi. I think whether it's populist for me to say it or not, when you as a citizen in Northern Ireland are given an undertaking by the government that your name will not be released, then it is not just a flippant act for someone to say,
well,
we're doing it anyway.
No.
That's my point.
It's absolutely not a flippant act. And I want to say two things that we need to get absolutely clear in our heads here. This is a serious matter where we're going to have these names released. People were told, I think, inappropriately, that they should expect anonymity. I see no good grounds why that should have been.
But they were told.
Stephen, let me finish. I see no good grounds why that should have been the case at the time. That's another question that needs to be asked. And the second thing is, I see absolutely no good grounds in the current scandal why that should continue. But here's the rub, Stephen. In order to make profit out of this scheme, you don't have to abuse the scheme. I mean, I was listening, Seamus Close was talking about people heating empty sheds. That's an abuse of the scheme. We all know that in our minds, if you're heating an empty shed, that's abuse. Might not cross the letter of the law, but everybody knows that instinctively that's... That,
it does cross the letter of the law, because one of the clauses in the scheme is that there needs to be a legitimate use of the heat.
Yeah, but the useful heat clause isn't legally binding. That's part of the problem. There are only some in these, only some of these clauses are clear around useful heat and some of the other things. What I'm saying is, to make an exorbitant profit out of the scheme, you didn't need to abuse it, you just needed to use it.
And for those people who were making an exorbitant profit, they were doing so on a gold-plated, legitimate, government-guaranteed scheme.
Which is why the focus has got to be, from my point of view, on how the scheme got to be so out of hand in the first place. The people who designed the scheme, the people who implemented the scheme, are responsible. There is already...
I'm not sure we're disagreeing here, Naomi. All I'm saying is, on Wednesday, on Wednesday, it would
be... We need to be cognizant of the fact that legitimate businesses using the scheme will be named.
Let me just say this, because I think it's important. It would be very, very easy for a programme like this, which is based on phone-ins... It would be very easy for us to whip up on Wednesday or Thursday, whenever it's going to be, when those names are released. Here's who has it. Here's another person. Here are the names. You know, I stress again that because someone is on that list having applied to it does not mean they've done anything wrong.
But you know, Stephen, what we're going to do with that list when we get it. We're going to go through that list minutely and we're going to say, who's he a friend of? Who's she related to? What party is that person likely to be supporting? I wonder, is this person a donor to any political party? I wonder, people are going to be saying, I wonder how many nationalists and unionists are on it. There's a break that way as well. You know, we're going to scrutinise this and you're going to scrutinise it because you hope to learn an awful lot from it.
But that's actually important, Stephen, because one of the key allegations around all of this was that, for example, the scheme was kept open to benefit certain people, and that the scheme was that people were being encouraged to go on it by certain people, that the word was out, that there were leaks in the department. So actually, the linkages are important. The individual businesses who applied and who are running the scheme by the book and who are doing everything by the book and apply properly, they haven't done anything wrong, and no one should be judging them as
That's
being
my
guilty
point.
Of a crime. And I totally agree with you. However, that doesn't mean that as part of the inquiry which we have called for, the linkages between people on that scheme, and particularly those who applied during the spike, and those who were involved in setting up the scheme, those who were potentially involved in leaking that information that the scheme was about to close prematurely.
You can't draw that inference from a name on a list.
No, you can't, but actually the inquiry can, because the inquiry can search all of that information, including donors and everything else to parties, and that's what we've asked them to do. It's important that we don't rush to judgment in this issue on anyone involved. We need to do the groundwork, and that's the point of an inquiry. But all of this information is being drip-fed into the public. None of it looks good, I have to say, for anybody involved. But nevertheless, we need to get to the truth of it. How was the scheme set up? Why were the cost controls removed? And why, when they realised that was a problem, was there this delay? And who let the cat out of the bag that during that delay was a good time to get on board? Those are the key questions. And it's those people and those who abused the scheme, those who actually did heat empty sheds and so on, that we now need to focus on completely. And I think it's right that government, when they have made a mistake, have to go back on that. But I would say again, when you're in receipt of public money, and it should be standard, Stephen, when you, as an organisation, are in receipt of public money, you're expected to give account for it, and you're expected for it to be public.
When you,
it's our money.
When you do a deal with anybody, you're expected to honour the agreement. When you do a deal with government, you would expect that that's 100% likely to be honourable. So when it says on a contract, your name will not be released, then I am suggesting that it's a pretty big deal for the government to go back on a contract they've made with any citizen in this country.
Yes, it absolutely is a big deal.
The government have made an absolute mess of this scheme.
But the point is, they did it.
And what they're doing now is they're trying to cover their backs, their tails, and they're going to publish a list. And the thing that it strikes me is that this is Northern Ireland. And in Northern Ireland, perception often means more than the truth itself.
And now look at what you've just said. So is it not highly dangerous publishing this list because the perception might be taken more than the truth? Surely it's the truth that matters.
I say that by way of agreeing with you, Stephen, but I'm saying that this is the reality of Northern Ireland, and the responsibility for this goes back to those who decided that they would introduce this type of scheme, which was crazy from day one.
And nothing on that list is going to hit those people.
But they should have, those who introduced it should have accepted responsibility for it from the beginning of December, instead of running away. If they'd come out, hands up, said, yes, we have made a mistake, now we're going to try to sort it out, and accepted the stand aside, where they were obviously had conflicts of interest, etc., from day one, then we wouldn't be in this mess.
They're
doing these other things.
Naomi, just before you go, let me make this final point to you. There are many other walks of life and things that happen in Northern Ireland where the word of the government is very important in terms of confidentiality and anonymity. Obviously, I'm talking about those citizens in our country who think to themselves, do you know what? The government has told me to come forward and be and report crime. I know a local drug dealer in my area and I'm guaranteed anonymity. I know of someone who's cheating the welfare system, and I've been told to write into that department and tell them who it is, and they will guarantee my anonymity. How can any of those people trust this government again if they look at this situation and, because it's convenient, people's names are being released?
Well, there are three quick things I want to say, Stephen. The first is that that's a completely different set of circumstances, because that
anonymity, same principle.
That anonymity is guaranteed in terms of law, and it's in terms of policy and practice.
It's the same principle.
No, it's not, Stephen. Let me finish and I'll explain why it isn't, because it's about protection of the individual. In this case, what we're dealing with is openness and transparency about the use of public funds, and that is a different circumstance. And actually, the longer this remains secret, you've already said they can tell the kind of business, where the business is and everything else. Not publishing the names again will suggest, as you say, the perception is that there is dishonesty or a lack of disclosure, none of which there is any substance to at this point in time. So actually, full disclosure may be in the interest of those businesses, because it stops the speculation altogether around who got it and who didn't get it and so on. And that speculation has been damaging. Third thing I want to say, Stephen, because I didn't get a chance at the beginning, I just want to take the opportunity to extend my sympathy and best wishes to the young officer who was shot last night, to his colleagues and his family, and to the people who were in the area when that incident took place. Clearly it's despicable, and I just wanted to put on record my sympathy for him, and I hope that he fully recovers from his experience.
Nice to talk to Naomi. I knew we need to go. Thanks. Thank you.